Hey, folks, the Liquor Lamp Podcast is now available on Stitcher. You can download the app and you can listen to us. You can enjoy us. You can review us. You can share us with your friends and you can have us on the go. That's the Liquor Lamp Podcast, now available on Stitcher. All right, let's start the show. I really need this to work, please. It's time for the Liquor Lamp Podcast with JoJo Lewis. Folks, welcome to the Liquor Lamp Podcast with JoJo Lewis. I am JoJo Lewis. That means you're on the Liquor Lamp Podcast. Yeah, it's episode 22 on this wonderful Black Friday. Thanks, you guys, for downloading it, for streaming it, for listening to it on the iTunes, for listening to it on Stitcher and all that. I'm really glad you guys can make it. It's a fun day for me here because I've been eating slowly over the course of 2 days. I think I've had about four or five plates of food and feel like I'm about to die. But, you know, it's okay. It's the holiday season. I wanted to feel fat today, and that's pretty good. Today on the show, I'm talking to the very interesting Jordan Gannon, who's a real character. I think that's a fair way to describe him. He's a real character. We talk about his life, and we talk about stuff that's happened to him, and it's a good time. In the meantime, I just want to, you know, as I always do, tell you guys what's been happening with old JoJo lately. And what's happening has been JoJo has suffered many disappointments in the course of his short time on this planet. But this week, he suffered a disappointment of a unique caliber. And I'm going to share it with you because I think it's kind of fun to talk about things that are terrible that happened to me. Here's the issue. I was, for the past couple months, I've been trying to go in for this. Basically, it's like a promotion thing at my work, which would have been really cool. Like, you get it, and then, oh, now I can think about my life in terms of years instead of months. Like, oh, yeah, I can think about, you know, instead of thinking about, you know, 6 months ahead, I can think about a year ahead of my life. What things are going to be like in a year? Because right now, if it's longer than a month, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm probably going to be dead or just homeless or whatever. So that's what was happening. I had an opportunity to have a little stability, and I went in. I did you know, the whole hoop jumping. Oh, you got to apply to it, and you got to do the interview part. Yeah, and I did all that. And when I did all that, you know, it was all the people who I already knew at my work. They were all like, yo, yeah, it's Joe, yo, it's great, he's a smart guy. And on top of that, as I'm leaving, the head of my department, who had never met me until that day, she really thought I was cool. She was like, listen, Joe, it was really good, you're very interesting, and here's how it's going to work. If you get the gig, you get an email. But if you don't get the gig, if you don't get the gig, you get an email. If you get the gig, you get a phone call. And I was like, all right, that sounds cool. So I took off, and that was about 2 weeks ago. And then on Tuesday, I've been waiting. I've been hoping. I'm like, okay, this is the week. Maybe I'm going to get it. I did a good job. I wake up on Tuesday to a phone call, and I'm like, all right, this is awesome. And I answer the phone, and it's the head of the department. And she's like, hey, yeah, Joe, you were really awesome. We really liked you. You're really valuable and extremely competitive and great. Unfortunately, there's someone better than you. So we're just calling to let you know you didn't get it. And here's the problem with that. I'm able to take rejection. I'm able to take disappointment. But come on, man. Like, I got the call, and that meant something to me. So it's basically my emotions went to their absolute highest point and then right into the fucking floor, like within 15 seconds of one another. So from Tuesday until today, I've just been kind of dealing with, you know, just this immense feeling of being disappointed. And there's nothing I can do about it. There's no recourse. And I just want to let you guys know that is the difficulty I've been dealing with this week. Interesting note, though, on Tuesday, I was disappointed and angry and all day, just on the verge of crying. I was so angry. And the one thing that kind of kept me from being too out there was the idea that, you know what, because I'm so angry, I'm probably going to have a pretty good set tonight. And I did. I had a great set. I did new jokes, and it was fun. But the point is, I would have rather had a terrible set with some life stability than a great set, and now I'm panicked about how, you know, the next 5 months are going to go. But you know what? That's my problem, not yours. And I know you guys sit through this stuff, and I really appreciate you sitting through it. If you don't, whatever. Let's get on to this interview with Jordan Gannon. Now, Jordan, he's an interesting dude. I've had a few talks with him. He's a deep guy, and he's really committed to performance, and he's really interesting. And it was a good talk. During the talk, John Gamora was sitting next to him the whole time, which led me to believe that they were fucking with me the entire interview, but maybe not. Maybe it was just a genuine interview. So anyway, here's my talk with the very interesting Jordan Gannon. Here we go. In the 2014 Mazda 3.
The not all new, but all new 2014. Mazda 3.
How did that come about being the thing that you say? Because you say that, I feel like I attribute you saying that way more than you actually say it.
Way,
like every time I see you, I'm like, 2014 Mazda 3.
The all-new 2014 Mazda 3. You know, it was a premise for a bit that I spitballed with Jamie and John on our road trip to Las Vegas.
Uh-huh.
I said, what if there was an article for Car and Driver where the writer was reviewing the all-new 2014 Mazda 3, and it's really efficient four-banger, but, you know, every paragraph just trailed off into his sordid, miserable life and how he used the Mazda 3, you know, like, so how
every single day I would drive past the cemetery, and I would wonder, why is my wife in there and I'm not? That doesn't seem fair. And then I look down at the wonderfully laid out console of the new 2014 Mazda 3. Like that?
Yeah, well, yeah. Something, really, whatever you want to do on it. Yeah. Like, you know, the responsive 2014 Mazda 3 handled very well around corners on the drive to Jojo Lewis's house.
And that bit that's never materialized?
That was it. The bit, I mean, the bit, I tried it out a couple times, kind of like that. Kind of different ways, and was never sure about that joke because it just kind of relied on a repetition. And
it was one of those things where it probably wouldn't be funny the first time, but the more you did it, it's kind of like the lengthening, like the slow build.
Yeah. Of the joke
in the
joke for delivery.
Yeah,
but I also thought just saying the words was kind of funny.
It is delightful. That's why I do it.
Rolls
a lot.
Off, yeah, the yeah, 2014 Mazda 3.
It's got a nice bunch of sounds all at once.
2014 Mazda 3.
So okay, so you do stand up. You're more of an improv guy, though, right?
Really?
Are you?
Is that what's going on?
That's my impression of you. Because I don't see you. I know you're active, but in the scene, but I don't see you very much at a lot of different mics. I normally just see you sometimes at the spot.
You know, it
I
is
feel
with,
like you're an improv.
You know, with the great sadness, I might have to concede your point to some extent.
Yeah.
You know, but really, I like to consider myself a triple threat, JoJo, more than a triple letdown. You know, I don't know where you got off throwing that out there.
Where,
but
I get off?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you get off? Is it usually in? It's not in this room.
No, not in here.
Okay.
I get too sad in here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, improv, stand-up, some writing, you know, I did a writing thing.
Uh-huh.
Stab, I was there for that.
I remember I was there for that as well.
I don't really consider myself any one of those things.
Yeah.
Like, I don't do much improv.
Okay.
But I guess the improv at this moment is probably the strongest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you just like doing lots of different... Fingers in a lot of pies. That's more pleasant for you.
Fingers in a lot of pies? Really? What is it? What is it?
That's a metaphor.
It's
a metaphor for that there's many pies, and if you want to claim many pies.
Do you taste the finger that you put the pie in?
No, this is purely for claiming the pie.
Oh, to claim the pie.
Yeah, because if there's a lot of pies, you're not going to have time to take a slice from each one before mm-hmm. someone else gets to it. But you do have enough time to put your finger in every pie.
Right.
And then they're yours. Then they know, like, oh, that guy put his finger in a lot of pies. What? Let's go to the cake section.
Good. They then wouldn't just get a slice from the rest of the pie.
No, they don't. That's how Ebola works. It's you touch one part of the pie, and now it's an Ebola pie.
I mean, that's topical, I guess. Yeah,
I
guess,
it's Ebola.
Yeah, no. It's,
I wasn't trying. I was just like, what's a good disease that vectors that way?
Are we going to talk about
what
diseases now?
We could talk about
epidemiology.
Diseases.
I know very little about it.
Yeah.
Diseases are value. I don't know.
What do you know a lot about? Because you seem to get kind of like deep into science and like metaphysics with a lot of your bits. That's something I've
really?
Noted. Yeah.
Science?
Different from a lot of people in the sense that it goes deep, and it is the things you tend to talk about are relatively complicated. I know.
Really?
I said goes deep.
Goes
John
deep.
Laughed.
Oh, did I laugh?
No. Did... John laughed. You kind of were just like, eh. John Gamora is here very quietly.
Hey, JoJo, when is this interview going to start?
It's kind of just going now.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So, I know about... I'm a dilettante, I suppose, or a jack of many trades.
Isn't a dilettante like a rich person who has no job, so they go on adventures?
Is that a dilettante?
I feel that's what a dilettante is. You just described yourself as like a turn of the century from money, like gentle. I think dilettante's the feminine, and then dandy is the masculine.
John, would you mind googling a word for me?
Would you be a deer?
It's very important for JoJo to get things right.
Yeah, it's essential that my references make sense. Normally, I would just fix it in post.
Dilettante.
I would never fix
a
it in person
who cultivates an area of interest such as arts without real commitment or knowledge.
So you're a hobbyist.
That's
from
right.
Origins in Latin and Italian. Is a person with an amateur interest in the arts.
Right. So
I like how we got British at the end of that.
In the arts.
It was delightful.
Amateur, yeah, amateur.
So you consider yourself dilettante?
Yeah.
In the act of making the weird connection.
The dilettante and the weird connection, yes.
Yeah, because we did the stab thing, and I remember you did this like it was like 15 minutes for the dating profile of space, and I was listening to it. I'm like, this is kind of deep and kind of makes sense. It's just like it's drawing on a lot of like seemingly accurate things. But you do that one bit about what is it? Like describe how to get to a particular aisle in a store without any reference to space or time or the relationship.
Right, that bit.
How do you come up with shit like that? Because it's kind of like. It's alty and, like, weird all at the same time. It's really good.
Oh.
But, like, how is it... What's the process of it?
That's my thought process, really. That's where I come from.
Yeah?
That's where I was raised. I mean, I could give props to my formal education.
Yeah?
But...
What's your formal education?
You know, I was trained in the great books at St. John's College on... Of the... And King's Mary's Williams College, a school. I went to a school.
You went to a school?
It's college. I went to college.
Which college?
St. John's College.
Really?
Yeah, that's, I got
I kind of couldn't tell when the voice
yeah,
started.
Yeah, not the one in Cambridge, but the one in Annapolis, Maryland.
What'd you study?
Philosophy, classics.
Okay.
History of math and science. They really didn't have majors. It was just... It was the great book school. Just look it up. I thought, you know, that's a thing. Can we cut this out of the interview?
Why would we want to?
This is making me highly uncomfortable.
How is it making you uncomfortable?
Well, you see, it's been almost 10 years. I haven't thought about it.
Is it bad memories?
Hmm.
Are they?
They're not bad memories.
Well, what's wrong with them? Why would you want to cut it?
No, there's not. It's just...
Are you having, like, a breakdown in front of me right now? Is that...
Just stop the interview, Joe. Just stop it before I throw... No.
It's getting too heavy. It's getting... too deep into just basic factual information. Just stuff I could probably Google, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot about my life. You know, I just started thinking about my former colleagues at St. John's, you know, and some of them I liked, some of them I didn't, and how we got along in our days, making it was a time. I fear that it will come off sounding pretentious. Is what I'm.
That's okay.
This is a podcast for.
No, go ahead and come off as pretentious.
No,
just do it. Just do it. Humor me.
No, I'm coming off as genuinely as I can. And so we went to college and we studied the so-called great books of Western civilization,
like Aristotle, the Plato.
Yeah.
Post-structural.
Iliad, Odyssey, and
the Phantasies,
starting in the ancient Greece for the freshman year, and then by the time you work your way up in senior year, or work your way up over laterally, had a wine tasting course and all the great works.
You had a wine tasting course,
you know, because it's like, how much time can you spend reading Plato? A lot. How much time? How much time do you have in college? Probably not enough. So, you know, like. Yeah, we're going to crank out reading The Republic in a week and a half or something like that. So,
jeez.
Or Hegel's Phenomenology of Spirit in a week. You know, like, by time, we spent the most time with Kant.
Uh-huh.
And with, a lot of time with Thomas and with the Bible. But, I mean, that's just like, and so there was a math and science component where, like, that bit from Stab, uh-huh. I was kind of just going over the debate between Leibniz and Newton about the nature of space, and just kind of putting it in a sassy black woman's voice.
In a sassy voice, as one does with heavy metaphysics of space and time. Just that's what we do.
That's what we do.
That's
yeah.
The only way it would even make sense, honestly.
That's right. It's so much more. Yeah, I was like, wow, my education is finally making sense, you know. I tried to write a junior essay on Leibniz and failed miserably. But now
you know the voice you would have to do.
Now I know the voice I would have had to have used to make sense of that.
Here's the thing about space. This is what it's all about. Okay, so you went, you studied these, basically, like, most of your education, it sounds like it was the foundations of Western, like, thought.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
heavy
yeah.
thought. Okay. What was the goal? Like, what got you into that, and then...
Oh, now, then, see, that's, okay, we're getting in there.
Yeah.
All right.
How'd you get into that?
You know, pressure.
Pressure?
Pressure.
What kind of pressure?
Probably familial.
Really? You had familial pressure to learn the great books, works?
Very impractical line of study in college, yeah.
How?
Most people say, you know, Jordan, why do you want to be an engineer? What can you do with that? You know, why do you still want to study engineering? Why don't you study the great books, Jordan? Why don't you study Plato?
That's a... Because it's always... No, because the story is always the opposite. You go to school...
Yeah.
Typically, the typical narrative is they go to school and they study those things because it's like their parents were like, no, you got to learn economics so you don't die. And then you're like, no, I'm going to learn Plato so I can really live.
So I can really live. Yeah. Yes, that was my belief. I study those things for the life of the mind and the freedom that is engendered by knowing.
And that was the compulsion to learn on.
Yeah, I believed that at the time.
Uh-huh. At the time?
Yeah.
So what happened?
Well, I mean, I still believe it now. I mean, jeez, you can make me cry, Jojo. You can make me cry.
Am I? We're only 15 minutes in.
All right.
That'd be a record almost.
Have you ever made anyone cry?
I got Cheryl to cry.
Cheryl the soccer mom.
I got her to cry.
The soccer mom?
The soccer mom.
What was she crying about?
Sad family memories about, you know, bad things that happen with her kids, basically.
Her kids?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I should listen to your podcast.
You should. How have you not?
I don't know.
It gets pretty heavy.
Apparently.
Yeah. What were we even talking about?
Well, I mean, my father, whom I love dearly, he was like, hey, Jordan, you should read these great books. And so I followed his advice. Uh-huh. And that was the thing that led me toward that whole line of thought, uh-huh. toward that kind of, and I really believed in it, like, hardcore.
Like the value of having that level of thought, or that complexity of thought?
Complexity of thought, that level of, it's kind of, like, necessary before you could even begin to form opinions about the world, because you haven't even, you're, otherwise you'd be resting ignorantly upon assumptions that you'd have no clue, you know, where they come from.
It's,
you know.
That thought enables you to empower experience, or empower your opinions to make more sense.
Yeah.
Or to speak about it in a bigger context.
To speak about it and to filter out, you know, useless speech that the rabble tend to make.
This sounds like useless rabble speech. I'm going to just move along from this gawker article.
You're letting me down, stumble upon.
What the fuck, man?
Who is this? LaRouche? But every day I still check Gawker to see if they might have something for me.
You'd think Mental Floss would be the one you'd be more into, because they have interesting things most days. Like, hey, do you know how toothbrushes are made? And I'm like, no, I don't. I have 20 minutes. Let's find out how toothbrushes are made. Yeah. And then I feel like I've learned something.
Do you ever remember anything that you read in those articles?
Sometimes, if it's, like, really striking, or if I feel I can use it later. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember one article I read was some random article, but it was basically the difference between birth rate and death rate. And the birth rate on this planet is, like, 4 times higher than the death rate. So for every 1 person that dies, there are 4 who are born. And I can remember that just because they had a map that showed, like, it pinged. Like, every time someone was born in a hospital, like, reported it, it was, like, it would show, like, where they were born. And I remember looking at it, and I was like, there's only one other system in nature that grows this way, and I'm pretty sure it's cancer that grows at a rate of 4 to 1.
That's, like, from The Matrix, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the guy who looks like an FBI agent says that to Neo.
He right? does?
Doesn't he says it about a virus. He says says the human race is a virus.
Oh. I don't remember that part. I only liked the first. Was that in the first one?
I think it was like in the third one.
Oh, see, I didn't like the other two.
No, they were terrible.
They were really bad.
Yeah, they were awful. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to derail.
No, it's okay.
Thing, but like is you because I mean is the human race a cancer upon the earth? I mean is that like
it behaves like one?
let's be clear here. It behaves like one. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. That's it. So okay, so you still use that heavy
so do rab- level. I mean, what about it. Other populations like rabbits?
Other populations?
Rabbits and like deer like oh, don't they occasionally behave like that?
They
when
do,
there's an
they
abundance have, of food but then they die out because of
yeah, they have a check,
food sources.
They have a check and balance. So like if there's way more deer then there'll be way more wolves to eat them.
Then there'll be way more like humans to shoot them.
And then the wolves will there'll be less food, so the wolves won't reproduce as much, and then everything's in balance.
In balance, well,
as balanced as it can be.
Yeah, these things go in
cycles.
Yeah. Ebbs and flows.
Yeah, human beings don't have any ebbs and flows.
I think there'll be a flow.
There'll probably be a flow.
An ebb. I think that's part of what the current scare with Ebola is like.
Ebola.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Ib. it's really in the name. That's what part of
it. Yeah, that's the beauty of it.
It's the doomsman has come for us.
I really do like that idea. The doomsman. He shows up in a nice suit to deliver terrible news and deaths.
Yeah. The doomsman.
Yeah.
And we could, like, throw him some change and stuff, like, so he'd be a tradition.
The tradition of giving the dooms. Thanks for the bad news.
Yeah, because he doesn't have any other way of making money. How is he gonna get paid?
Like, he's a volunteer. Like, he just goes door to door. Like, I don't know if you heard. It's 13 people died in a bus crash. And he squeezes his hand together, like, come on, fucker, these shoes are not new. Can you tell? I had to walk all the way from downtown where the accident was. This is a nightmare.
Is the implication that he, like, is one of the agents that caused the horror?
No, more like he was one of the best witnesses.
He's just a witness. Like, anybody could don the doomsman costume.
Most people see the doom and they're like, oh my god, this is terrible. He's like, oh fuck, I gotta go tell people. So he just starts walking. Like, he sees it, he gets as much information as is pertinent, and he just goes out into the world. Just spread. Basically, he's sowing discord. Like, he's just going to people and putting in them, hey, here's a terrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
Pay up. I gotta go.
Pay up.
Because this is not free for me to do. So he has to get paid through donations.
That's what comedians are, right?
Kind of.
Kind of. I was kind of thinking that.
Kind of, sort of. We are like doomsmen. In a way. Doomsday? We do bring the bad news, but we bring it in a cheery way. I would think.
What is the bad news? I mean, like, if there were... the good news is that Jesus Christ has died for our sins and redeemed all mankind. So what is the bad news?
The bad news is that all mankind is set up into a dyad of oppressor and oppressed, and that's how we exist. At all times, and we're held in place by myths and ideas. That's the bad news. The good news is it'll be okay at the end. The bad news is it sucks dick right now. Like, this is garbage existence.
You had John Gamora pointing, like,
he was like, his inner sanity. He's like, this guy,
right here. Oppressor and oppressed. Yep. That's right. I have nothing to say about that. That seems like I don't know. I have no opinion about that.
You have no opinion about the role of comedian as doomsman?
Oppressor and oppressed.
As
comedian as doomsman, yeah, there's a... Because the doomsman fundamentally... Does he upset your way of life and everything that you had believed? Or does he just kind of give you something that's kind of like shitty? Some bad news?
I guess it depends on how shitty it is. Because there's some shitty things you can be told where you're like, oh... Okay, well, that's sad. Then there's some shitty things you're like, oh, fuck, I have to pick a different way to work now. Like, it just...
Right.
Yeah, it just depends on the level of complexity of the idea, or how important that idea would be to you, which the doomsman wouldn't know.
He wouldn't... Like, I was thinking there might be better and worse doomsmen, like, who would know how to pick their topics and their... Or pick the people they would tell.
So they would see someone like, okay, I'm not going to tell them... the headline. I'll give them the lesser doom story.
To just find the right thing to really set a person over the edge.
Just say the right thing that they'll go crazy.
And then it builds. You know, he's like, hey, you know, Reginald killed himself, you know, and he would withhold the fact that he had caused it. He had been...
Oh, like, he frames it in just the right way. Like, and they'd be like, oh, that Reginald. He was always playing with his guns. Now look what happened.
Yeah, but the doomsman had caused it.
Yeah.
And he causes the next thing that happens.
Like, through his words, he causes the next horrible thing? Or he actually physically causes the thing that happens?
No, I don't think he can. He has to be hands-off.
Okay.
He has to be hands-off.
Okay. I always wonder that. Like, can you, like, what? I have this belief that there's a set of words that you can say to a person that you don't know what they are, but if you hit them just right, it'll cause them to kill themselves.
Like a little, like an incantation, or like a cheat code.
Kind of. You'll never know exactly what, it probably changes moment to moment, and it probably changes depending on the weather or all kinds of stuff. But I'm sure that for every human being, there's a statement that you could make to them at the right time that would just make them kill themselves. Either their heart would stop or they would go try to kill themselves.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That seems like a...
Because with the infinite number of words, there's right. just so many words and so many possible orders that one of them's got to work. I think that.
I don't know. I mean, would it be like, would you hear the sound in like in Zelda when you like open a chest?
Oh, like the do 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 do
do. Yeah, yeah, like that.
Oh, yeah, but it's like much darker, and then someone like it's played with like an old pipe organ, and then their eyes get all big, and then they just kind of walk away into traffic, yeah. And you're like, oh man, I should have saved that for someone better. shouldn't have been practicing in this low level area.
Low level shit, man.
It's like a critical hit with your words.
Right. Critical hit. And then how often do you get those? You don't get those very often, right?
I imagine not very often. Unless you're... I don't know if there's anyone who could really, like, do that. Like, they could say things and then people just die.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of easy political humor, there's no way to really do that.
Yeah.
Like, at the level of, hey, just a guy... If you see someone on the street and you say something to him, and then he just kills himself. That'd be impressive, but unlikely.
That's how Daily Coast makes me feel.
That's how what?
Daily Coast.
What's Daily Coast?
I'm sorry. I was just going for some easy hit. You know, like a political website, Daily Coast?
I didn't know that was
Daily
Coast?
All right.
Okay. It's got deep.
It did. It got really dark. Like, I have to say... Because we're joking around, but fundamentally don't believe in the possibility that there is words that you could say. That, like, there are some people that are, some words could, there is, yeah, so for some people that's true.
Yeah, that there's, like, you don't believe that there really are words.
But not for all people.
Oh, like, no, I wouldn't say that's.
I guess you're saying, yeah, like, I'm saying at some point in some everybody's life or some person's life.
I'm saying, like, there's probably a platonic ideal of language that. Is the death spell that you could probably, that no one will ever figure out.
It seems
out.
Like you could like really delve into this and just hide from society.
Just trying to figure this out.
Trying to figure this out.
Like you run out of notebook paper, so you just start writing on the walls.
Right, right. And you'd write tomes and tomes of incantations.
And then Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt would show up and you would cut her head off and put it in the... box.
What's in the box?
Yeah, what is in the box?
What's in the box?
That was a good movie.
Was it?
You didn't like that movie?
It was all right.
This is a good film. It had murder and this is
that's,
grim.
That's
is
Jojo. Grim that's Jojo podcast. Lewis for you. That was a good film. It had murder.
And I'm just laughing uncontrollably.
It had forced suicide.
It did, didn't it? It had a lot of it.
Jojo Lewis.
I realize at times that my sense of humor is very not normal. Or very not to the level of a regular person's. Because I laugh at really grim things. Mm. But most people don't tend to do that. I don't know what to do about it. What's your sense of humor? Is it darker? Is it more lighthearted? Or you're like, I can appreciate everything.
I'm just a goofball. I'm, you know, really influenced by Ralphie May. So, you know, everything is just Ralphie.
Really?
Ralphie May.
You're really influenced by Ralphie May? Are you lying to me, right? Are you fucking with me?
And Chelsea Handler?
Are you serious? Because I will believe you. And I'll be going out throughout the world like, oh yeah, Chelsea Handler and Ralphie May. I know. I don't.
Those
I don't
are
know
my guys.
I don't know. I guess if you read enough, they are hella deep. But I don't know. A little bit of Larry TCG in there. You know,
yeah,
just a dash,
just a little bit, a little bit, just to keep it real, just to keep it, to keep my humor grounded.
Yeah, you don't want to get too into it,
too highfalutin with Ralphie May and Chelsea Handler. You know, sometimes I think they can be a little pretentious, a little.
Oh, that's awful that I laughed so hard at that. I feel bad. Because they're out there, they're making people happy.
I know, they are. Yeah. Well, I don't understand the context for some of Ralphie May's humor. Like, he had a bit where he's, he said, like, sometimes you just think about punching your woman in the face. And he got an applause break for that. And I just did not.
That's a premise.
Yeah.
Possibly.
So.
Did he do more with it?
Yeah, he did. But it was kind of along the same lines. I didn't. Like, he's not a bad joke teller. Like, he can do his thing. Like, he. But on that one, like, I don't remember the turn. Maybe I was just kind of weirded out by the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was like. It's like, yeah, that's just like medication for guys, you know? Just thinking about it. You wouldn't do it. Like, that was his saving grace, right? He's like, you wouldn't do it, but you think about it, and that makes you feel good. And I was like.
Did that get laughs and applause?
Yeah.
Really? I wonder if that's a mass thing, like that there's so many people.
Yeah.
That would be my instinct.
And maybe I just didn't get it. It just went right over my head. So
it's pretty heavy.
You know, just the twists and turns, the irony.
You brought Heidegger in right at the end. You just had to really be paying attention to it. I don't know how he could do that. I don't know any Heidegger. I just knew the name.
Heidegger.
Yeah, I'm kind of a fake intellectual sort.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have to read the great books. They let me graduate without doing that.
They let you read the second rate books.
The second rate books. Yeah, they let me read like maybe 15 books.
They let you read 15 books.
They're like 15. Like how many books do I have to read? Like 30? Like 50? They're like, you can get by with like 10, and you just go back. I mean, read 15 in case, but really 10. And actually, when you get really into it, it's going to be like 5.
It's going to be like 5
yeah.
books that you read the entirety of them.
Yeah.
Most of them you just read a couple paragraphs from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm writing a paper in like 2 weeks. It's going to be very long. It's going to cover maybe like 4 books. Maybe
have 4. Have you read the 4 books?
Oh, yeah. I've read them. Okay. I've read them. I've tried applying their lessons to my life, as is a good reader of books to do. It's going okay.
Like... What are the lessons? What is one of the books? I mean, I read
Pedagogy of the Oppressed,
mm-hmm.
by Freire, which was pretty neat because it was basically about how it's a book basically on teaching.
I got that teacher.
Yeah. And it's there's 2 models of teaching, and okay. one's where you kind of just say information and everyone kind of just listens and remembers it and spits it up later.
Uh-huh.
And that method is set up such that there's no dialogue and it's oppressive because then you as the teacher are an instrument of oppression and everyone else is your object of education. And then the other method is where you have a dialogue where you ask questions and relate it to personal experience. And yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's what I got out of it. I don't know. I gave it to John. He hasn't read it. I know he hasn't.
The Teaching Methods of the Oppressed.
Yes.
How to teach to the oppressed? Like, hey, I'm a teacher, and I know I'm teaching to these...
It's how to teach so you don't oppress.
So you don't oppress.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. got to have a light touch. It's how to teach others to teach themselves.
The teaching of really Jesus Christ.
He laid on hands.
He'll set you free.
He's known for that. Just
laying on of hands.
A little bit of smiting, but really the laying on the hands. He laid it on pretty thick with his hands.
Mm.
It caused people to see.
Put mud in their eyes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm sick. He's like, I need a cure blindness today. Let's find a drunk and seal his eyes. You are healed. And he just like scratches. That's blasphemous. I'm going to hell for that one.
Trying to remember, did he spit in his eyes or did he put just mud in his eyes?
I
What's the story? I don't remember the story.
Probably the mud thing.
So, like, people would remember, people would talk about the spit thing, right? They'd be like,
hey. Yeah, they'd be like, and then Jesus spit on him, like, for some reason. I mean, he was better, but it didn't seem necessary. It didn't
seem to, Jesus can heal people from far away. There's a guy who just.
I mean, not farther than you would think. Right. Like, however long, depends on how much cheese he had that day, it's how far he can heal you.
As much cheese as he had?
You know, you get cheese, you get phlegmy.
Phlegmy, oh.
Yeah, like, sorry, I didn't unless he leap. Was kind of just spitting water, and that healed him. Maybe. Jesus is gross. That's Jesus, the lesson from Jesus this. Jesus is gross Jesus. And rude.
Jesus had the maturity level of Brian Crawl. He would do these bits. He would do a healing bit where he would spit in people's faces.
He would never do that, but you know at some level he was like, I could probably get away with that.
I could heal a guy by spitting in his
if
face.
If it worked, they wouldn't question how I did it. So like, yeah. Oh, that would be a fun way to spend an afternoon.
I'm not laughing at this.
I'm not either. No, I am. This is a good thought.
That's
for
a
me.
Good process. I could, yeah, I like that. You know, I wouldn't mind a healer god who did that. You know, like if that was what I was raised with, like my traditionally, like the thing that I grew up learning was like, yeah, and then he spit on the guy's face, and I'd be like, all right, that was what God did.
Yeah. Were you raised with any kind of set of higher belief, or was it just like
I was raised a Catholic?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Were they like strict to it?
No, I wasn't, like, strictly raised.
Did you go to, you say you didn't go to Mass every Sunday?
Oh, yeah, I went to Mass every Sunday.
Oh, really?
And pretty much every Sunday.
Okay. That's interesting to me. You're the first person I think I've met who's like that.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. That I've asked about it, anyway. Do you still go to Mass every Sunday?
On occasion.
Really?
On occasion, yeah.
Yeah. You still get something out of it?
Yeah, yeah.
That's good.
Well, there's things there I like to believe because they make no sense. That's one of the reasons I like to believe in them.
There's things you like to believe that make no sense, which is why they're nice to believe in.
Yeah, I think that's... Well, this is just the thing I said the other day, so I wanted to repeat it. You know, it might not be true at this moment. You know, in therapy, they're like, speak about the thing that is true in this moment. But anyway, the transubstantiation, I love that. Just amazing.
Yeah?
Like, ridiculous.
Just the ritual of it.
Oh, the ritual is great.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think if we did a comedy show I'm just thinking of comedy, but we could just translate everything into comedy, but just the ritual of the act, you know, the raising of the host and the consecration.
Yeah.
It's really great. But also these Aristotelian notions mixed with the scripture in this very faithful way, like, you know, like, yeah, and then it is substantially no longer bread, it is substantially the body of Christ. It is the body of Christ, like, it is incidentally bread, like, that's what's going on. That is amazing to me.
He was a guy who dug his carbs. He was super into that. He's mainly bread.
He's really dry.
You think at first it was just the bread, and then they were like, oh, we need something to wash this down.
Wash this down.
This is...
Well, the wine. Yeah. Include that.
So what are we going to say it is? Just say it's his blood or something. Say it's his spit, then it'll heal him.
It's the spit. This is the spit of Christ.
Yeah, see, it loses some of the romance if it's the spit of Christ.
Holy water is never presented as the spit or the sweat of Christ. Like, no. That is something I've never even... deign to imagine.
I feel like I've read somewhere what makes it holy and it has to have like roses in it and sanctified under the moon. I feel there is a moon ritual involved in the creation of
my,
holy water.
My religion is contained in a role-playing game.
They're really sick. Like, they don't roll a d20 to be saved. That's what they do on the other side. That's a basically you go into confessional. That's a dungeon master.
That's a dungeon master.
And you're telling him your actions, and he's like, "Okay, well, if you want, here's the difficulty. You got to roll to beat 15 Hail Marys and 4 Our Fathers." And you're like, "Oh crap!
Oh crap!
I wasted all my bonuses at the Minotaur." It's a weird church.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, it would be great.
I could be part of that church as well.
I could be, yeah, hell yeah. Where instead of a rosary, it's just a bunch of dice.
Like, yeah, you'd have to play so many. I actually don't play role-playing games, like tabletop games,
but yeah.
Play so many roles of a dungeon. And like, like that would be your penance.
Oh, yeah. And then you have to.
It's like your penance is keep playing until you roll a 20 or something like that, you know.
And then at the 20, then you are forgiven.
Then you're forgiven,
but yeah. Until that 20, it has to be a natural 20. You can't
natural 20. Yeah, and see, that would insert this element of chance, which is, like, crazy, right? It would the deity is involved, you know, because he could keep you there for eons.
Yeah.
You might never roll that 20.
I'm surprised this hasn't already sprung up as a thing. I feel like this might actually be a thing already. Yeah. I think there's a D20 based church.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the LARPing role-playing game kids in my college who were also Catholics would have been into that.
I imagine so.
No offense to those people if they are listening.
It's okay. They'll curse us, and we'll turn to frogs in their minds, and they'll be fine. That's one thing that I see from time to time that it still actually surprises me that people do is LARPing.
LARPing, yeah.
It surprises me literally every time I see it.
Well, what kind of, like, Civil War LARPing or just...
Vampire.
Vampire or medieval?
Okay. Vampire, like Vampire the Masquerade LARPing. Like White Wolf LARPing.
I'm not familiar with White Wolf LARPing.
They're this company that makes all these, this series of games where that you pretend to be different types of monsters who have different societies and they go out and do things and have adventures.
Do you ever do anything?
Do I personally?
No, does one pretend to do things? Like, I'm pretending to buy a snow cone at the Quickie Mart.
Well, yeah, but you have to...
But do you actually buy it? I mean...
Like, do you physically go out and do it?
Yeah.
I don't think you... I think you in your mind do it. You imagine to do it, and then you announce to everyone that you've done it, and then they agree.
Like, what kind of things do you tell people that you do?
Well, I've never done it. But I imagine it would be like, oh, I'm going to go and talk to this... a fancy fellow,
mm-hmm.
and get information from him using my subterfuge ability.
Like, do you pull a card from a deck and be like, you have to shimmy your boobs for to the stranger or something?
Oh, there's no deck. You just kind of talk it out.
You talk it out. Oh, okay.
And they have referees around who are basically the dungeon masters, but they're in charge.
This. Okay. So I was at the University of Chicago for one quarter. Pretty irrelevant, but another thing that happened in my life. I was riding the bus. Yes, they had a bus. It looked like a prison bus. It would ride us from this converted hotel that was a dorm to the main campus. And there was this guy who, I don't know how we started talking because I was in theater or something. He just started talking to me randomly, which was part of the appeal of him because I didn't talk to people, so that was nice. But then he wanted me to do this very thing that you're describing, and it sounded very weird to me. It was like, hey, you got a good imagination, right? And I was like, how did you guess? And of course, I don't know if he guessed or saw something in me, truly, or just saw that I was lonely and, you know, just alone.
Easy to influence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe I had pale skin. But once he described the thing that you're talking about,
really,
it sounded very scary. Like I had committed to doing it because I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I realized what he was talking about, and I was like, no, let's not do that. Can I role play in my mind that I actually didn't do that and tell you that I didn't?
Just having a role play that I'm taking the address down on where to go. I want to fake write it on this piece of paper. Can we agree? My finger is the pen.
That's right. Yeah, another lonely time. And we were talking, we weren't talking about Lonely Times, but
that's a good lonely time.
It's a good lonely time. Yeah.
What's your loneliest time?
Thanks you for bringing. Thanks you.
I'm thanked.
Loneliest time. Probably. I think there's a lot on my list.
If you had a short list of top two.
Short list?
I have a top two that are vying in my head of when I felt the most alone. I can say one of mine first, and then you can say one of yours.
Sure. Okay. Like, you know, I'm just putting dead air on here.
Okay, so I think right now they're tied for first, but the first one is I was at Thanksgiving, and my mom had been drinking, which we'd never seen her do before, and she went in for a hug, and for my brother, and my brother was not having it, so he shoved her, and she fell backward and broke her ankle. And then he ran off, and I had to carry her back into the house and make sure they called 911, because she was totally trashed. But it was more ankle related. Anyway, so the walk back, where I'm walking back, like, I just watched domestic violence happen. That was a pretty lonely time. I kind of felt like, nothing matters, and I don't feel like anyone cares.
Did you ever drink alcohol? Have you ever drunk alcohol?
I have drank alcohol since then. It doesn't affect me. But I know...
Was that event, like, formative in your understanding of alcohol? Like,
no, that was like 3 years ago.
I don't want this kind of condition in my life.
No, that was like 3 years ago. Oh. Like, I've been around drunk people. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, but when it's your parents, is it... Was it more moving or more kind of affecting?
I guess it would be, but I don't know. I would say I was already an adult at the time. Mm-hmm. So it didn't affect me that much. I mean, it affected me in that it messed with my perception of my parent.
But how long would you say you're an adult?
How long have I said I'd be an adult?
Yeah, how long would you say that you have been an adult?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Less than 5 years, maybe. Probably less than five at the most.
But you're like 22, so...
I'm 27.
So you're like 27.
Like, I would have been 22 as an adult. That would have been my first year of adulthood. Did you think I was 22? Why? What about me says I'm 22? Is it the baby face? What is
it? It's your laugh, JoJo. It's all your laugh.
It's my childish laughter. Laugh. But yeah, that was probably the loneliest time. Mm. And I don't think it's affected much about how I... Like, I don't drink, but I didn't drink before. Mm-hmm. So it didn't modify it much. But yeah, it was a lonely time.
That sounds lonely.
Yeah, it was lonely. Sounds... Your turn. You throw out the lonely.
There was one time I was talking about just a little while ago when... I just moved to Midtown.
Yeah.
And I wanted to meet people. So I went to the Pine Cove and I got drunk. I just was like, I'm going to have a beer and I'll have another beer. And then I started doing shots. I was by myself, by the way, and I was making eyes at this girl who was across the bar. And I thought I was making eyes. Yeah, I was. Yeah. So we ended up going to either her house or her friend's house, like her and her friend and me. And their house had just too many, like, you know when you realize that somebody has a lot of cats?
Yeah.
Like really big cats.
Like not like house cats, like ocelots.
Ocelots. Like this person raises ocelots. And they just let them bounce around freely in the house. And their litter box is like the size of their living room. Yeah. No. So, luckily, they were like, you know, they had that conference, the girl conference.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's, maybe it was the drunk conference or whatever. But they were like, we're going to go to sleep now. Was really good because I left, and as soon as I got back to my apartment, it was like projectile vomiting for the next day.
Ooh.
Like, I drank a lot. I can't believe I just... Anyways, so that was my moving to Midtown story.
That's a pretty lonely
So, time. Yeah. I mean, it's a bad decision.
Yeah. That sounds pretty lonely.
I mean...
Are you still in Midtown?
Still live in Midtown, yeah.
Okay.
Same place.
Yeah.
Well, I live right above it now.
You've risen above...
I've risen above that low that behavior. Yeah, never... Yeah. That's, That was a time where...
How long ago was that?
Being drunk is, like, one thing. Yeah. But, like, being drunk in a context where you're like, I have no connections in the world.
That's a grim moment.
Yeah.
When you feel like you have no connections in the world.
Yeah.
Because then you're just like, well, then what am I supposed to do with myself? Because there doesn't seem to be a point.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it just really feels nihilistic and just like, I might as well be somebody in like some side character in somebody's 18th century novel, you know?
Yeah, I'm the masses. I am the faceless masses who stare on at the horror of the main character and have no opinion.
That's right.
That's all I do. I'm either going to or on my way from debtor's prison. That's it. That's my whole life.
Yeah, that's how it felt at the time. Yeah. So...
That's a bummer of a moment.
That was a bummer. Yeah, no, but yeah. That was a while ago, like a couple of years ago.
Okay. I have a moment that's similar to that one. Not that we're trying to one-up each other, but I do have a moment.
Please do, because that wasn't like that. Okay.
When I was in school, I didn't really have any like friends or whatever. I didn't hang out with anybody. And I remember this one time, my girlfriend called me in the middle of the night, and she was like, yeah, I don't really think I like being with you anymore, and I think you're boring, and I don't want to see you anymore. And I was like, oh, no. And I was like, okay.
Oh, no.
And then the next day is when it, like, really hit, and I was walking. I was in my hallway, and I was just like, why am I bothering? I actually thought, like, why am I bothering going to the end of this hallway? Like, I have no, like, nothing's going to be better. And I kind of, like, just crouched down in a fetal position, just lay there. Like, there's nobody and there's nothing at the end of that hallway.
Was there, like, a bathroom at the end of the hallway? Like, why would you?
Well, no,
it
was to the stairs down.
Oh.
The bathroom was I was actually relatively close to the bathroom, but I just stopped mid hallway and just laid down.
Please describe the architecture of this building.
Well, okay, so it was kind of like the hallway was set up that there was like a half wall. And then you can see this, like the stairs were on the other side of that half wall, but it's like kind of like a hall.
So half walls are kind of set up so that you aren't lonely, right? You can see over the top of them.
They're supposed to be, but on the other side of this half wall was just a wall. So if you were just looking straight on at the half wall, it would look like a wall, unless you looked over the side of the half wall and you realized, oh, there's a space, but really it's just a wall.
Was it like a makeout space, like down like a set of, like a stairwell? Or like a drug deal space?
It was more like a, just like a practical hall space. Yeah, it was a house.
Oh, house. For some reason I had a large institutional building in mind.
Oh,
just like you at a,
like I laid down
at a medical research center, yeah, in the middle of like a double wide hallway.
Oh, that's very such a grim place to want to lay down. They have beds everywhere, but you don't want to sleep in them. It's gross.
Yeah, just laying down on the cold. Is that linoleum?
I think it's linoleum.
Would it be linoleum?
Just the tile, linoleum tile, and you lay down on it, and you're like, "This is cold.
It's cold,
and it feels like my insides." But no, this was carpeted, and I was laying down on this, like, I have nothing.
Wow.
I feel empty.
It's a real, like a sense of, no sense of a reason to go on. Like,
yeah. And that really, I think, is what is the, it's a sense of there's no people. Not that there's no nothing to do, it's that there's no people to do them with or for.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the depression is. It's not so much that it's... Everything's point because everything is still pointless.
Yeah, that's.
But when you
that's
have
the message of the Doomsman.
Like, yeah, but when you have people.
You got that, Pat. Yeah.
But when you have people who you're like, oh, I can do meaningless things with this person. That's nice. And then you don't have any people, and it's just the meaninglessness, and you're like, oh, fuck.
I know.
What's the point? This got good. This got towards the end. Like.
That's good. Yeah, no, that's good, yeah. Like, I did some meaningless things with people today. Got brunch.
I like how you said you got brunch, and it, the context that it was meaningless, and John immediately looked up, like, it wasn't that bad. It was, we had mimosas, they were delicious.
You know, Jamie Fernandez was with us. She got the bottomless mimosas. And, I got a sour beer.
Yeah. Meaningless, but with other people.
Right, I could go. Delightful. Like, do you want to know the menu?
What was the menu?
Well, it was like every other brunch in Sacramento.
Not bad.
Not great.
Not great, but not bad. Bottomless mimosa. Some places don't have that. All places have that, I think, mm-hmm. actually. Like, that's a requirement of brunch.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's that plus cantaloupe plus omelet bar.
It was at Poor House. I'm not gonna recommend it though.
Oh, okay. I don't even know.
Should I have not done that? Should I not do, is that there's a commercial infringement of an establishment in Sacramento?
I don't think Poor House is gonna hear my podcast and be upset about it.
I don't know. DJ Sandu does stand up comedy there, so
oh.
Word might get around.
So yeah, I heard about from this one podcast on an even numbered episode. I don't even know which episode it was, but it was even numbered. Someone mentioned that the brunch was less than stellar. Not that it was bad. It was just nothing you'd write home about. Mm. So it's on.
So it's on. Episode number, age at which JoJo turned into an adult.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good timing with that. Yeah. Know, this guy. This was a nice grim dark episode.
Grim dark.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a word for that in German that's just one word.
Probably.
It's used a lot.
Just some expansion on the word knocked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No. Or just the word knocked. That sounds grim. And dark. I actually think Grim Dark is the name of a location in Dungeons & Dragons. Pretty sure.
Grim Dark.
I'm actually almost certain it is. I think there's mushrooms there. And that they glow.
There's hella mushrooms
in Grim Dark. There's so many mushrooms in Grim Dark. Dark bad. That's a fun
dark, oh, dark bad. That's his planet in Star Wars. That's George Lucas naming conventions.
Be. Yeah. Okay.
Is this what it has been?
I think this is what it has been.
Is it what it has been?
I think it is.
Has it been what it is?
It is. I think.
Ah.
I'm not sure. We talked about a lot of stuff, and most of it was depressing, which is what I wanted.
Hmm.
And I laughed a lot, which I think is all you can hope for.
Yeah.
So yeah. Did you have a time?
We had a good time.
Did you have a good time?
I okay. think so.
Excellent. Well, thank you for coming up and doing this, Jordan. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks, JoJo Lewis. Let's do this again.
All right, folks, that's been the show. Yeah, thank you for listening to the Liquorland Podcast. I've been Joe Lewis. Make sure to download us on Stitcher. Make sure to review us on iTunes. Next week on the show, I'm talking to another very, very interesting person, Mr. Garrett Boatman. So stay tuned for that. Have a good one, you guys. Happy Thanksgiving. And you know what? I think this worked. I really think this worked.